Bubble popper on your phone? No way, Miss Angel. If Dr. Charish caught me, she'd fire me like that. He snapped his fingers. That sucks. I'd be dead of boredom by now. Money's good. I can handle it. He winked. For now, at least. You're a better man than I am. Or, figuratively speaking. I grinned. I'd better get to work. Catch you later, Billy. In the main lab room, soft jazz music floated over the low hum of equipment. Christy perched on a stool in front of a computer, while one-ear Fritz leaned against a nearby counter, arms folded casually over his chest, but eyes sharp and watchful. Jacques and a Christy tech with a glorious chest-length auburn beard sorted through computer printouts at the center table. On the far side of the room, Brian and Rachel conversed quietly while still managing to keep an eye on everything. Christy glanced up as I pulled the garbage bag from my backpack. You have the blood sample. Good. She pointed at the bearded tech. You there. Come take care of this. Where's Dr. Nakis? I asked. He left about 10 minutes ago by helicopter to return to his own lab. Being here, around new people, is hard on him. She stated it frankly, with no hint of derision. Yeah, it is, I said, more than a little surprised by her show of actual empathy. Beardzilla approached, wearing mask and gloves, and bearing a big zip bag marked with a biohazard symbol. I slipped a glove onto my right hand, then lifted the towel out and dropped it into the biohazard bag. Though I couldn't catch the Shambler disease, I didn't want to contaminate everything I touched later and endanger others. The tech left the room with the bag, while I stripped off the glove and shoved it into the medical waste bin. I started to throw the garbage bag in as well, then thought better of it. Christy was almost acting like a normal, feeling human right now, but I wasn't keen on giving her full control over the blood sample. After checking that her attention was elsewhere, I stuffed the bag into my backpack. Is there anything else that needs doing? I asked. She swiveled to face me, gaze penetrating. Tell me what happened in the bowling alley. Damn it. I hated turning over any sort of info to her, but Christy was supposedly an ally and needed to know. Holding back a grimace, I related the events with the same kind of precise detail I'd used when briefing Dr. Nakis. She listened without interrupting, lips pursed in thought. When I finished, she tapped her pen on the pad and gazed at the ceiling as if mulling over everything I'd said. Go back to the wounded one, she said after a moment. He was shot in the spine? That's what I figured since he stayed down. His upper body seemed to work fine, but his legs didn't. Interesting. And they took him to Tucker Point Regional, I assume? Yeah, and if the others aren't there, they probably ended up at the Tucker Point High School gym. Triage kind of thing. All right, let's go. Christy logged out of the computer and slid off the stool. Billy? He opened the door and stepped in. Yes, ma'am. Would you be a dear and drive us? Billy practically snapped to attention. Yes, ma'am. He dashed out. Us? I shook my head. Where are we going? To the hospital, of course. Christy tucked her legal pad and tablet into a black leather briefcase. I know it's hard for you, but do try to keep up with the conversation. I gritted my teeth. Why do you want me to go? For your scintillating wit. A furious retort bubbled up, but I held it back. She wanted me to lose my temper. I wasn't going to play her game. Be fucking straight with me, or find another lackey. She lifted her chin. I need an assistant who's able to interact closely with the Shambler patients, and I would rather not jeopardize a human, considering your kind aren't at risk of infection. Jacques has important work to do here. She gestured toward Brian and Kyle. And these two, well, they don't fit the other requisite. My assistant for this also needs to have a smattering of medical experience, which I'm assuming your time in the morgue has given you. It wasn't an insult, or even a backhanded compliment, though she'd seriously underestimated Kyle. I wasn't quite sure how to respond. I shot a quick look at Brian, but he simply lifted one shoulder a fraction of an inch in a might as well gesture. Or maybe it was, you're going to die. Hard to tell. Okay, I told Christy.
Dr. Charish, Brian said, Mr. Griffin will be accompanying you.
Kyle stepped forward. Her smile turned icy.
I have my own bodyguards. Yes, ma'am, you do.
Brian's expression grew fiercely polite.
It's not your body I'm concerned about.
Christy hesitated, as if weighing whether this was a battle worth fighting, then closed the briefcase and slung the strap over her shoulder.
Let's go then.
To my surprise, a limo was waiting for us out front, though not a stretch big enough to fit 10 high school seniors on the way to prom. It still screamed elegance and money and I'm important enough to have someone drive me around while I think about important things. I really needed to get rich. Reno pulled up behind in a sleek black Mercedes sedan. Overkill much with the bodyguards? Maybe Christy thought I'd attack her the instant we were alone. As much as I hated her, I wasn't even tempted. She was so nasty her brain would probably taste rancid. Fritz climbed into Reno's car, while Billy ushered Christy and me into the back of the limo. Kyle took the limo's front passenger seat, and Billy settled behind the wheel. Kyle's presence was a relief, for that little pinch of fear that Christy was up to something horrible with her need for an assistant, me of all people. I braced myself for snark, veiled insults, or other nastiness from her, but she ignored me and worked on her notes and tablet. Relaxing, I watched her out of the corner of my eye, quietly envying her ability to look so effortlessly stylish yet professional. Then again, money could buy an elegant smartwatch, perfectly tailored clothing, and bras that actually fit, and made your boobs properly perky. Haircut and colored by someone other than cuts for y'all, and stockings that weren't sold at the grocery store, and shoes. She had on elegant little tan pumps with a sensible yet attractive 3-inch heel. Are your shoes made of alligator skin? Christy flipped a page on a legal pad.
I certainly hope so. They're the Manolo Blahnik Blixa alligator pump.
I pulled out my phone and Googled the name.
$4,000?
That was more than my car had cost. Christy made a notation in the margin.
$4,600 before tax.
She returned to ignoring me and didn't speak again until we pulled up at the hospital. And then it was to say,
oh, here already. Let's go, Angel.
Billy leaped out to open Christy's door and give her a hand out. Then he sprinted around to my side, looking crushed when he saw I dared open my own door. He thrust his hand at me, and though I was perfectly capable of getting out of a vehicle on my lonesome, I took it. Didn't want to hurt the poor guy's feelings. Kyle let himself out and followed us into the hospital, a silent, comforting shadow. Not so comforting was Fritz taking up the rear. At the information desk, Christy offered the white-haired lady there a dazzling smile.
I'm Dr. Christy Charish. I believe Dr. Ingram is expecting me.
Before the words were completely out of her mouth, a brown-skinned man with a receding hairline and impressive mustache burst through a set of double doors and rushed up to Christy.
Dr. Charish.
He seized her hand and pumped it.
When your secretary called to say you were on your way here to offer a consultation pro bono, well, you have no idea how thrilled I was. Having a doctor with your credentials and experience help us with this medical mystery, it's a blessing from above.
Huh. Some of the tapping on her tablet must have been to her secretary to orchestrate a grand entrance. I would have probably done the same. Cut through the bureaucratic bullshit with a few well-placed phone calls. But the way he referred to her as doctor sure made it sound like she was an MD kind of doctor. Never would have thought that. What kind of bedside manner did she have? Lethal? Christy extricated her hand, smile never wavering,
I'm given to understand a patient exhibiting LZ1 symptoms came in with a gunshot wound. Is he still alive? LZ1? What a boring name for the Eugene-caused illness. Thanks a lot, CDC.
Yes, it's the most unusual thing I've ever seen. Come, I'll show you.
He gestured toward the double doors, then leveled a frown at the rest of us as we moved to follow her.
I'm Angel Crawford, coroner's office. I pointed to the logo on my work shirt. I'm partnering with Dr. Charish in this medical mystery investigation.
Christy shot me an exasperated look at my self-promotion from assistant to partner, but she could hardly correct me in front of Dr. Ingram.
Yes, she said through her teeth. Quite the partnership.
And Mr. Griffin is my assistant, I said cheerfully with a tilt of my head toward him. Kyle said smoothly,
It's good to see you, Dr. Ingram.
Dr. Ingram shook his hand.
It's been a while.
While Kyle impressed me yet again, Christy rolled her eyes behind Dr. Ingram's back.
I believe you were going to take me and my partners to the patient.
She gestured to include Fritz in the partnership.
Oh, yes, right this way.
He bustled off toward the elevators, Christy's heels ticking behind him. Up one floor and down the first corridor, a hospital security guard stood beside the door to room 202. A computer-printed sign proclaimed authorized personnel only. Dr. Ingram distributed face masks from an equipment cart near the door, then led our little troop of authorized personnel into the room. Harsh fluorescent light from the fixture above the headboard brightened the bed, but left the corners of the room in shadows. Dreadlocks man growled and jerked against his wrist restraints as we entered. He was lying on his back, which struck me as odd since his worst wound was there. Kyle and Fritz took up positions on either side of the door, while Christy, Dr. Ingram, and I eased closer to the bed.
What's been done about his injury? I asked.
Dr. Ingram shrugged helplessly.
Very little, to be honest. We've been unable to perform surgery due to the violent nature of the patient and the utter ineffectiveness of sedation.
So he's just lying there with a gunshot wound?
I asked, aghast. His shoulders hunched.
Both entry and exit wounds have been treated and bandaged, but we can't even scan him to assess the extent of the damage.
Christy nodded toward the mobile computer workstation near the foot of the bed.
I need to see his records, please.
Dr. Ingram typed in his passcode, waited, then did it again.
Sorry. The system has been glitchy since a crash day before yesterday.
The day Beckett Connor was here, I said. Tuesday, right?
Yes. He was the first LZ1 case.
He peered at the screen.
Quite a mess. I mean the computer system, not the unfortunate Deputy Connor.
Christy raised an eyebrow.
I've always found Reliafile EMR to be extremely dependable.
It is. I mean, it has been. This was the first major issue since it was installed years ago.
Dr. Ingram clicked the mouse a few times.
Ah, here we are.
He pulled up a set of records with the name August Lejeune at the top. The Gussie, the girl at the bowling alley had referred to. Christy took over the computer, face intense as she scanned the info.
His blood counts are normal. No coagulopathy. Blood gases, urine, normal. That's correct. It's completely unprecedented. He has an epigastric entry wound and an exit wound at the level of T7. The bullet went right through his liver. He should be bleeding out internally, but there's no sign of it.
He's not dying.
Christy breathed, eyes alight.
Yes, he is, I pointed out with a scowl. Maybe not from the gunshot wound, but this infection is killing people, and it will kill him.
Christy closed the file.
I'm aware of that. However, you must admit this is a fortuitous development for the patient. Otherwise, he would likely be dead before a cure could be developed.
I suppose, yeah. Her logic did little to counter the mercenary glee behind the words. Lejeune let out a hair-raising growl that trailed off into,
"Hungry."
Dr. Ingram sucked in a breath.
That's the first time he's spoken since he came in.
He started to lean close, but I grabbed his collar and hauled him back, right as Lejeune lunged to the limit of his restraints, teeth snapping.
"Hungry,"
Lejeune snarled. Dr. Ingram collected himself and tugged his lab coat straight.
Yes, thank you, Miss Crawford. We've started putting protection masks on the LZ-1 patients, but as you can see, Mr. Lejeune becomes very, aggressive whenever anyone approaches. We feared he might aggravate his injury or succeed in biting someone during an attempt to put a mask on him.
He smoothed his hair down with trembling fingers.
There's not much to be done about his hunger at this point, but he's receiving adequate nutrition via IV for the time being.
Lejeune's breath hissed through his teeth.
Hungry.
I had an ugly feeling it wasn't cafeteria food he was craving, unless they'd recently put brains on the menu.
Chapter 26. If Christy could have skipped in her Manolo Blahnik alligator shoes, she would have. As it was, she came perilously close to prancing as we returned to the car.
My God, she breathed. Think of the possibilities.
She gave Billy a nod and smile as he opened the car door for her. I exchanged a look with Kyle, then got in on the other side, while he took the front seat again. Lucky bastard.
Tucker Point High School, Billy?
Christy said. You want to see the other shamblers? I said.
Sharp as ever, Angel. She patted her briefcase. I need samples, but it's also necessary for me to see a number of the LZ-1 patients in person for direct assessment. Samples alone simply aren't enough. Not to mention, I want to test how this mutated parasite of yours,
Eugene.
Excuse me?
She frowned at the interruption. I gave her a bland look. The mutated parasite is called Eugene. Christy held up her hand.
No. You and Ari can continue using that silly name, but I will not. LZ-1 serves perfectly well as a designation for both the condition and the mutated parasite that causes it.
Fine, I muttered. Why LZ-1?
It was the CDC's Dr. Lafferty who came up with it. Officially, it's LZ-1, an ordinary file designation. But to her, it's Louisiana Zombie.
Christy tittered, the sound grating on every single nerve in my body.
Of course, Lafferty thinks it's a little inside joke between us to reflect the mindless nature of the victims. Oh, if she only knew how close to the truth she was.
Yeah. Hilarious. Christy's reaction made me want to punch her right in that perky nose. But even I could admit calling it Louisiana Zombie 1 was kind of appropriate. So what did you want to test?
How the mutated parasite, LZ-1, reacts to brains. Dr. Nikas and I agree that brains are the most likely and logical stabilizer for the shamblers, but without a trial, it's only a hypothesis. I don't expect to find a difference in response between shamblers and normal zombies, but that confirmation in itself would be valuable information. I have with me packets of ProSwole gel, a perfectly reasonable protein supplement to administer, though I've altered some to 50% brains. No one will be the wiser.
Kyle tried to feed brains to Connor, but he wouldn't take them. We would have tried again.
But the poor fellow died before you could.
Christy heaved a oh-so-sad sigh.
Terrible shame.
My shoulders tensed. Dying kinda happens when you're murdered.
It was indeed a far too drastic measure, she tisked. Saberton.
I sneered.
Yeah, you would never kill anyone for your own purposes.
Come now, Angel. Let's not drudge up old grievances when everyone is cooperating so nicely. You don't want to cause more problems now, do you?
Her smile turned vicious.
Wasn't unleashing LZ1 on the world enough for you?
Kyle cast a dark look at her over his shoulder.
Fuck this bitch. Now you listen to me, Dr. Christy Fuckface. I've been playing nice right along with the rest of the tribe, and I'll continue to do so as long as a treatment or cure is in the works.
I bared my teeth at her.
But it's a fucking two-way street. Bitch doctor snarkiness doesn't fall under the play nice umbrella. I'm not here for your amusement. I'm here for August Lejeune and all the victims in the hospital and the gym.
I leaned in.
If it weren't for them, I'd crush your skull and eat your brain right here and now and worry about the indigestion later.
It was Billy's turn to glance back, though his look was more horrified than dark.
My, aren't we testy today?
Christy said coolly, though the fury in her eyes betrayed her true feelings. I gave her my best dazzling smile, and proud of it. She flipped a page on her legal pad and pretended to work. Annoyance wafted from her in an acrid wave.
Ha! I'd shut her up and gotten under her skin. Wasn't much, but I'd take it.
Allowing myself a mental fist pump, I settled back into the cushy comfort of the seat. A few minutes later, we piled out in front of the Tucker Point High School gym, the same gym where my dad and I stayed after the flood swept our house away, and not far from the football field where the mass fight scene for High School Zombie Apocalypse had been shot. A deputy and a Tucker Point cop chatted near the double doors. Christy, Kyle, Fritz, and I showed ID, but it was Christy's name that earned us the "yes ma'am, right this way ma'am" treatment. The deputy handed us surgical-type masks and waited for us to put them on before ushering us into the gym. Deja vu hit me as I took in the scene. Cots with people on them, like after the flood, but the similarities ended there. Then, the cots had been clustered in family groups, and refugees slept or commiserated or played cards. The smell of fresh coffee and hot pizza had filled the air, and soothing music had played over the PA. Now, the cots were numbered and lined up in orderly rows. Four rows of eight. Around two-thirds were occupied, far too many for my liking, and close to a dozen gloved and masked medical personnel tended equipment and restrained the patients. The heavy stench of blood, sweat, urine, shit, and disinfectant blanketed everything. Growls, moans, and wails were the only music. About a third of the patients wore the plastic face shields Dr. Ingram had mentioned, designed to protect the people tending them from being bitten or spit at. Each occupied cot, and a few of the empty ones, had an IV stand and a mobile vitals monitor at the head. A woman in black scrubs with sleek gray hair pulled back into a ponytail adjusted the IV flow for a patient in the nearest row, the doctor I'd seen on the news when the epidemic first went public. She made a final tweak, disposed of her gloves, and approached in brisk strides.
"You must be Dr. Charish," she said. "Dr. Ingram told me you and your associates were on the way over. I'm Dr. Maureen Bauer, epidemiologist." Her tone was crisp and professional, with zero Dr. Ingram-style fawning. "It's a pleasure to meet you."
Christy shook the other woman's hand.
"Perhaps you could get me up to speed on what you have here."
Her manner was equally no-nonsense, a far cry from her "I'm very important" attitude at the hospital. Was that a conscious thing for her to change her bearing depending on who she was talking to? Or did she just have a natural ability to adjust to fit the circumstances? Either way, I couldn't help but envy the knack. Dr. Bauer swept her arm to encompass the gym.
"We have two other doctors, four RNs, and four patient care assistants on duty now. More personnel and equipment are expected to arrive by morning. I gestured to the pale yellow mitten sleeve things she had on. Like flexible arm casts, they covered her forearms and hands, leaving thumbs and fingers free.
What are those for?
She flexed her fingers. Kevlar fiber sleeves, best protection against bites. We found that the majority of the patients can't tolerate having their mouths covered. It sends them into recalcitrant status epilepticus, perhaps triggered by panic, and is relieved only by removal of the face shields.
Excellent observation and workaround, Christy said. What can you tell me about LZ-1?
It's fatal, Dr. Bauer replied, expression grim. We lost 2 yesterday and 3 this morning. Their deaths were all very sudden, as if their bodies simply gave out.
Fascinating, Christy said.
Then she and Dr. Bauer dove into an epidemiology discussion that sailed way over my head by the second sentence. I gave up trying to comprehend it and headed for the first row of patients. Kyle remained within earshot of Christy, much better able to absorb the conversation for Dr. Nikas. Hell, for all I knew, he was recording it. Though Dr. Nikas couldn't come here to assess the victims, I could make my own observations and report back to him. Every medical worker was deeply engaged in patient care, and I did my best to stay out of their way as I walked slowly past the cots. Some patients were bound with standard medical restraints, but the rest with straps fashioned from duct tape. Great minds think alike. There were several familiar faces among the patients without bite shields. Nurse Patricia's dead white eyes tracked me. A barista from Dear John's snapped and howled as I passed. The Rucker twins lay on adjacent cots, moaning and writhing. A subtle flutter rose in my gut. I stopped and reached toward the foot of the nearest twin.
Hey,
a man's voice called out. I jerked my hand back.
Glove up before touching.
The voice belonged to a portly assistant the next row over. I bit my lip. Sorry. He shook his head at my stupidity and resumed adjusting the restraints on his patient. The click of Christy's heels warned me of her approach.
Oh, twins can be quite useful in research.
A sliver of unease crawled down my spine at the creepy elation in her tone. I'm sure they're thrilled to be here. She ignored my comment.
Dr. Bauer is on board with trying to nourish these poor souls with the ProSwole gel. I'm going to take a quick peek at all of them, then you can administer it. For now, run along.
She waggled her fingers in a shooing gesture, then turned her back on me and strode toward the first clot.
For now, run along,
I mimicked, complete with an exaggerated, derpy expression. Because I was mature like that. Fritz joined Christy as she peered at the first victim, ready to guard her precious body if the shambler got too rowdy. In the next row, Kyle crouched beside cot 12, attentive to everything around him. A shambler behind me let out a piercing wail. I spun to see Dr. Bauer trying to check the pupils on an elderly woman. The patient wore a face shield, but it didn't stop her from lunging and trying to bite. Need a hand? I asked. Looks like everyone else is busy.
I'd love a hand, Dr. Bauer said. If you could hold her head still for a moment.
Once I had the thrashing woman in my grasp, Dr. Bauer did the light shine thing with each eye, then gestured for me to release my hold.
Thanks for the help. You would think 11 staff for 21 patients would be adequate, but we're at the bare minimum for safety and maintenance. God forbid we fill the empty cots.
Can't you call more workers in?
Screening is being done. We're not allowing anyone with children at home to work with these patients due to the uncertainties about transmission. Fingers crossed, by morning we should have a decent pool from the surrounding parishes. But at the moment, we're fairly short-handed.
That's probably the right call, though, I said, the part about workers with children. A moan from the next cot over interrupted the doctor's reply.
Hungry.
It was Patricia.
her eyes fixed on me, and slightly less milky white than before.
That's the first time any of them have spoken, Dr. Bauer said, frowning.
One of them did at the hospital a little while ago. I went on to tell her about August Lejeune and his gunshot wound. Patricia let out a keening wail.
Hungry, she shuddered. Brains.
Dr. Bauer gasped and put a hand to her mouth.
Oh, dear God. It's true.
Not the reaction I expected. What do you mean? What's true? Dr. Bauer dropped her hand to her stomach.
A paramedic told me about a woman he took to the emergency room an hour or so ago.
One of these LZ1 cases?
No, but connected. The patient, I'll call her Miss L, told the authorities her uncle had been bitten last night by a neighbor, number 21 over there. But the incident hadn't been reported because her aunt wanted to treat the uncle at home.
Dr. Bauer let out a sigh.
No insurance, and didn't want to lose everything to medical debt. I winced. All too common. Indeed. This morning, Miss L woke up to her aunt's screams from downstairs. She went down with a gun and found her aunt with her head bashed in, and her uncle eating her brain, I gently prompted. That's what Miss L said when the police questioned her. And the uncle came at her, and though Miss L shot him multiple times, it didn't slow him down. He clawed her up, but she managed to shoot him in the head and run for help.
Great. The monsters were getting more monstrous.
Let me guess. No one believes her story, I said sourly. Or if they do, they won't admit it.
Of course not. That would be crazy.
Dr. Bauer's gaze rested on Patricia.
But I'll be quite interested to see what shows up in the uncle's stomach contents during the autopsy.
The coroner's office pathologist is Dr. LeBlanc. I'm sure he'd be glad to share his findings with you.
I had no need to find out what was in the uncle's stomach. I already knew.
Thank you. I'll keep that in mind.
Brains,
Patricia rasped. A moan of hungry came from a patient in the next row, echoed by one of the Rucker twins. Patricia repeated,
Brains.
Christy approached, gazing thoughtfully down at Patricia.
Interesting. We'll see how they do with the Proswol gel.
Dr. Bauer looked around at the harried workers.
I'm sorry, I don't have anyone to assist you.
Angel has that covered, Christy said.
We won't disturb your...
An IV stand on the third row crashed to the floor.
Arms loose,
a nurse hollered.
Excuse me,
Dr. Bauer said and rushed over.
I wonder how that happened,
Christy said, as if she wasn't wondering at all.
Come on, Angel, hop to it. We have testing to do.
Chapter 27.
There are 21 patients,
Christy told me as she headed toward cot one, where Fritz waited with her briefcase.
Each will receive a packet.
She lowered her voice. 6 packets contain a proprietary blend of Proswol gel and brains. 1 is pure brains, and the rest unadulterated Proswol gel. You will administer them because you can't get infected. She was only testing the brain food on a few of the patients, yet feeding all of them, not only to have a control group, but also to muddy the waters if anything odd happened with the test subjects. Since they all supposedly received the same food, any bad outcome would be considered an isolated incident, and certainly not the fault of a well-known nutritional supplement. At patient one's cot, I tugged on gloves for the sake of appearance.
How did you choose who gets what?
Christy retrieved her tablet from the briefcase Fritz held.
All you need to do is feed the patients the packets I give you. Let me worry about the rest.
I folded my arms over my chest.
It's not a complicated question, and I'm not feeding anyone anything until you give me a satisfactory answer.
No need to make a scene.
She glanced around as if afraid someone would notice my grievous insubordination.
I selected 2 males, 2 females, 1 of the twins, and the youngest. Satisfied?
I shrugged. It'll do. For now. Christy consulted her tablet.
Cot 1 gets packet 8.
Fritz dug around in the briefcase, then passed me a packet of ProSwole gel with 8 written on it in permanent marker. As far as I could tell, it was the standard commercial ProSwole gel packaging, similar to squeeze yogurt. I tore off the top, and the aroma of peaches with a hint of vanilla floated up, but not a whiff of brains. Patient 1 was a 30-something woman wearing a face shield, her once manicured nails ragged and broken to the quick. As I crouched beside the cot, she yanked against the restraints and growled low. I murmured softly, telling her it was going to be okay, and we were working to find a cure. The words themselves probably didn't help, but I hoped my tone might. Gingerly, I lifted off the face shield, ready to pull back if she snapped, but she simply bared her teeth, cloudy eyes fixed on me.
Brains.
Well, I have some really nice protein gel for you. I held the packet close to her mouth, gave it a quick squeeze when she bit at it. A good dollop of the goopy gel landed on her tongue, and she noisily smacked and swallowed it down.
Brains.
It took only 3 more squeezes to get the rest of it into her, though it didn't seem to satisfy her hunger at all. Not surprising, since I suspected she really wanted actual brains, and I knew all too well how sucktastic brain hunger was. While Christy made notes on the tablet, I replaced the face shield, then we moved on to the next cot. Patients 2, 3, and 4 were also picked to receive plain old protein gel, judging by the scent. 2 and 3 were moaning, "Hungry," and down their whole packet, but 4 didn't say anything and wouldn't take the protein gel. Connor hadn't ever said hungry either. Maybe if he had, he'd have taken brains. But it wouldn't have made any difference, not with a deadly trank in his ear. Though patients lunged and snapped at the medical workers, not a single one of them showed the slightest aggression toward me. Odd, yet not. With every cot, my drive, my need to find a cure increased. As if these were people I'd known my entire life, people who needed my protection and were deeply important to me. A chorus of brains, brains, brains followed me to patient 5, Rucker Twin 1, from the bowling alley. He lay on an extra-wide, extra-long cot, yanking non-stop against his restraints. "Armel Rucker," I said in a soothing voice. "It's gonna be all right." He wasn't wearing a face shield, which allowed me to see his rictus grin relax as I spoke. In my periphery, I saw Kyle watching from several cots away.
"Packet 1," Christy said.
This time, when I ripped off the top, the lovely scent of pure brains filled my nose. Not as tempting as fresh, warm brains straight out of a skull, but delectable nonetheless. Armel's eyes stretched wide.
"Brains."
"Yep. Some good old protein gel for you." I jerked back as he snapped at the packet. "Easy there, darling. This is some good stuff, but you have to take it slow." Or not. When he opened his mouth to let out a phlegmy growl, I seized the opportunity and squirted the whole packet in. Tongue working, he swallowed the brains down with a gulp, growl fading to a low moan that sounded way too much like pleasure. Eyes already clearer, his head lolled as he breathed out,
"Brains."
In a long sigh, with an expression of pure shambler bliss on his face. Pleased, I moved on to Armel's twin, Arkel Rucker. He took regular protein gel in the same no-fuss, non-body manner as the first 3, though with less satisfaction, to judge by his piteous moans. Cots 7 and 8 were empty, so we proceeded to the next row for patient 9. who looked enough like Dr. LeBlanc to make my heart lurch uncomfortably before I realized it wasn't him. When I opened his packet, I had no doubt it was the gel brain blend. The concoction smelled of proteiny vanilla brains, along with a subtle pungent quality like dirty socks in a laundry basket. Not very appetizing. But then again, I'd made some god-awful mixtures in the past, like the time I tried to make brain sushi, or the disastrous guacamole incident. Nine ate the mixture just fine, but then kept sticking his tongue out as if he was trying to get rid of the taste. Different. I sniffed the packet and was about to take a tiny lick when Christy snatched it from my hand.
"Would you behave?" she scolded. "We do not have time to dilly-dally."
Exasperated, she shoved the empty packet into the briefcase and pointed to the next cot. How the hell was she able to make me feel like a third grader who'd been caught eating paste? And why was she being so protective of the empty packets? Kyle continued to shadow me from a distance as I fed the next two patients ordinary protein gel. At patient 12, I ripped open the packet. Peaches, vanilla, brains. And a sharp chemical scent that reminded me of acetone and burnt sugar. I turned to Christy. "What the hell is this?" She consulted her tablet.
"Brains and gel.
You do remember I have a much better sense of smell than you, right?" I kept my tone low and even. "Tell me what the fuck this is. There's something in here besides brains and Proswol gel. It's definitely not the same as the blend I gave to patient 9. That one had a different smell."
"Angel, you're overreacting," she said, jaw tense. "Can we please get back to feeding the patients?"
"I thought we were over the lie to Angel bullshit." I narrowed my eyes. She wanted me to shut up and not ask about the ingredients. "I'm feeling a mite bit peckish. Maybe I should go ahead and down this packet of brains and protein." I lifted the packet to my lips.
"Stop," she hissed. "Don't eat that. I'm testing two possible cures. Use your head and imagine what that might do to your recently recovered parasite."
My little bluff had worked, and now I knew what she was really doing here. I lowered the packet. "Does Dr. Nikas know you're testing cures now?" She hesitated for only an instant, but it was long enough to tell me he didn't.
"Angel, we can discuss this later. Right now, we have work to do."
There was no way Dr. Nikas would approve tests on live patients sight unseen. I could always refuse to feed any more patients, but that wouldn't stop her enlisting the help of Dr. Bauer or even Fritz. In a zombie speed move, I snatched the briefcase from Fritz and slung the strap over my shoulder. "I'll meet you at the limo." Christy grabbed my wrist. I stopped, looked down at her hand, then up at her face.
"You don't really want me to make a scene, do you?" I said low and silky. "I'm really good at making scenes, and I have nothing to lose. Wanna try me?"
She released me and muttered to Fritz to stand down. I turned away and strode down the row toward the entrance. I still had the full yet open packet in my hand, and since I was tired of holding it and feeling more than a little bit ornery, I shoved it into the briefcase and gave it a good squeeze.
Clickety-clickety-click.
Her heels behind me.
"Angel," she said sweetly for everyone else's benefit, "we need to discuss that procedure a teensy bit more."
I kept walking. "We can do it on the way back to NuQuest Corps." Behind me, a mighty voice roared,
"Brains!"
I spun to see Armel Rucker bucking so hard his cot was inching along the gym floor.
"Brains!" he bellowed,
triggering moans and howls and hisses of brains and hungry from what seemed to be every patient in the place. Kyle angled toward me, and I shoved the briefcase into his hands. "Keep that safe and call Dr. Nikas." With smooth efficiency, he grasped the handle and pulled out his phone.
"On it."
Leaving that concern behind, I rushed to the swarm of nurses, doctors, assistants, trying to hold Armel and Cot in place. Christy watched from a few yards away, expression a combination of curiosity and shock.
Brains!
He fought the restraints, warping the cot frame with every fierce yank. Heart thudding, I shouldered in next to Dr. Bauer, grabbed Armel's head, and hung on for dear life as he thrashed. I tried talking to him to maybe soothe or calm, but my voice was lost in the racket of the other patients. The cot frame gave way with a groan of metal and tipped to the side. One arm restraint came loose and Armel swung the liberated limb, clocking a worker in the side of the head. It would only be a matter of seconds before he ripped completely free of the twisted frame. If that happened, a bullet to the head would be damn near the only way to stop him from hurting others. No way was I going to let that happen. There had to be a way to calm him without anyone having to die. I scrambled back and looked around in a desperate search for a miracle. My gaze stopped on patient 4. That was it. I tore the face shield from her and hollered, "Status epilepticus!" like it was a magic spell. Dr. Bauer looked at me as if I was crazy. Then her eyes lit up in understanding. "Everyone, on the count of 3, grab him and hold tight." On 3, I dove into the fray. They wouldn't be able to hold Armel for more than a few seconds, but that was all I needed. With zombie speed, I fixed the shield over his mouth and tightened the strap. He clacked his teeth together hard, then let out a bellow worthy of a bull elephant with a rosebush up his ass. A violent twisting move sent 3 people crashing back on their asses, but before I could rip the shield off as a bad idea, he went limp. A second later, his fingers started twitching as his unrestrained forearm moved in a lazy arc. "That's it," Dr. Bauer cried as if she couldn't believe the tactic had worked. "Get the restraints off and put him in the recovery position." The cacophony of the other patients died back to earlier levels with the occasional brains or hungry, as if in sync with Armel's state. Breathing hard, I sat back while 4 workers disentangled Armel from the wrecked cot and rolled him to his left side. How long is it safe for him to seize like this? Dr. Bauer knelt beside him, checking pulse points. "We'll get him back on the monitor in a sec. For now, he's breathing. All we need is enough time to set up his restraints again." Within a few minutes, the assistants had a new cot set up and restraints in place. They rolled Armel onto a blanket, then heaved him up onto the cot. Dr. Bauer, armed with her Kevlar sleeves, cautiously removed the face shield while the assistants worked swiftly to tighten restraints. Armel sucked in a snotty breath and let it out in a low moan. No thrashing, no biting. I rested my hand on his shoulder. "There you go, sweetie. It's gonna be all right." But what the hell? My intuition told me it was no coincidence he turned into a zombie berserker not long after eating pure brains. Which meant my hopes that brains could be a shambler stabilizer were now dust. On the other row, a patient abruptly let out an eerie, piercing whistle cry that didn't sound like it could come from a human throat. Number 9, the one who reminded me of Dr. LeBlanc. His back arched and his head thrashed as if he'd been doused in burning oil. He screamed, then loud, guttural, horrific. A second later, he collapsed to the cot and didn't move again. His heart monitor went from normal-looking blips to a wavy line like a series of steep hills and valleys close together. Dr. Bauer raced to his side. "Code on 9, sustained VTAC, move it, people, move it." I stayed beside Armel, hand still on his shoulder, staring in shock as the medical team scrambled in organized chaos. Too much like Connor. Sharp orders flowed together in my ears, but the team reacted and acted smoothly with chest compressions and ventilation and medications. Only a few minutes ago, I'd given that man Christy's dirty sock-smelling cure trial. I glanced over and saw that she hadn't moved from her spot.
She watched the team work on patient 9, forehead puckered and mouth tight as she slowly pulled on gloves. Definitely didn't look happy. I dragged my attention back to the frenzy of activity around cot 9. Charging to 120 joules, clear, shock, more chest compressions, epi. I couldn't see exactly what was happening, but judging by the serious focus of the team, it wasn't good. I remained beside Armel, talking to him, soothing. There was nothing I could do for patient 9 except hope for a miracle. But deep down, I knew he was gone. I didn't even know his name. V-fib, compressions, shock at 200, cursing, asystole, more compressions, epi, nothing. Dr. Bauer stepped back, wiped her forehead with a sleeve. Shit. I'm calling it. Time of death, 1822. Christy started toward Dr. Bauer. I followed, stomach churning after witnessing the man's death. Dr. Bauer's eyes were haggard over her mask. The others we lost? No screaming, nothing like this.
I'm so very sorry to be brusque in this difficult moment, Christy said, but I need to take postmortem tissue and blood samples from the deceased immediately, along with random samples from some of the others.
Dr. Bauer waved a weary hand.
Take whatever you need, if it will help put an end to this nightmare.
Christy murmured a quiet thanks, then gestured for me to follow her. At the end of the row, she spoke through clenched teeth.
I need my damn briefcase.
If it contains sampling equipment, sure. Kyle glided over as if on cue, briefcase over his shoulder. To my chagrin, he passed the briefcase to Fritz, then held his phone out for me.
Angel, there's a call for you. I'll help Dr. Charish collect the samples.
I took the phone with a nod of thanks. Kyle would not only collect samples, but also keep an eagle eye on what she was doing. While the two of them got to work, I speedwalked to a far corner beside the bleachers, out of earshot of anyone except maybe Kyle. Hello?
Angel.
Dr. Nikas's gentle voice, rough with tension. Kyle must have filled him in on everything, including Armel's awful reaction to pure brains and the death of patient 9.
Are you all right?
Not, tell me what I need to know, or do this, do that. I let out a shuddering breath. Yeah. I was the one who gave that patient the gel stuff with the test cure, but I know it wasn't my fault he died. I had plenty of other shit to feel guilty about. No sense taking on guilt that didn't belong to me.
Precisely.
He sounded relieved that he didn't have to talk me off the ledge. Again.
You may have delivered the means, but his blood isn't on your hands. Kyle said Christy planned to test 7 patients with 3 of 1 cure trial, 3 of another, and 1 of pure brains. Your quick thinking and bold intervention to stop the trials likely prevented more deaths.
Thanks, Doc. But it doesn't change that she used me, and an innocent man died. I shot a furious glare across the gym at Christy. I really want to wring her neck. Now would be a really sweet time.
I know.
He sighed softly.
I can't make this right. Nothing can bring that man back. I can only ask that you give me a chance to deal with Christy myself tomorrow. After analysis is complete on the samples Kyle took from the open packets. And after I have the full story from you, along with whatever information I can get from her. She has little trust for us, with good reason. But I need to hear her rationale for conducting these cure trials without consulting me. We need her, but I can't abide games, especially those that kill. Will you give me that time?
Anger and heartache still roiled within me, but I couldn't deny Dr. Nikas. Of course, I said. I won't do anything stupid, not on purpose, at least.
I grimaced as a thought occurred to me. How will Pierce take this? Christy's supposed to be open and honest with you. Will he try to default back to the zombify and enslave plan for her?
Quite possibly, but I will handle him.
His voice sounded infinitely weary. I suspect from centuries of being Suleiman, Clarence, Francis, Pietro, Pierce's, Rock, and Solace.
I told Kyle to return her briefcase and to not allow any more feeding. You did right in taking it, but I cannot have a meaningful conversation with her if we keep it from her.
All right, I said and tried not to grumble. I don't like it, but I understand. And I trust you. Besides, she could mix up another batch of cures that kill if she wanted to, so there was no point in taking the packets from her. I'll be at the tribe lab later this evening.
Good. I will see you then. Take care, Angel. And thank you.
By the time I returned to the cot area, Kyle and Christy had finished taking samples. While Christy thanked Dr. Bauer, I said a last goodbye to Armel, and then we departed without fanfare. As soon as we were in the limo, Christy raised the plexiglass partition between us and the front, then gazed out the window, forehead creased in thought. I managed to tolerate the silence for all of 30 seconds. What exactly happened back there? A man died.
I'm quite aware, she replied tightly. I don't need some backwater hick to enlighten me.
How about having a civil conversation? That's really tough for me at the moment, but I'll give it a shot for the good of the team. She remained silent for at least a full minute before finally speaking.
All right. It seems consumption of pure brains may trigger a short period of calm, followed by extreme violence, aggressiveness, and strength in LZ1 patients, whereas brains preceded with protein gel do not. I can't draw a definitive conclusion based on a single case. The one cure trial I was able to complete on patient 9 yielded some data, the extent of which will be determined after analysis of his blood and tissue samples.
Yielded some data? I sputtered. You killed a man.
He wasn't supposed to die. That was an unfortunate outcome.
Jesus! I tossed my hands up. What the hell happened to you to make you such an unfeeling bitch? Did mommy not hug you enough? Christy's eyes snapped to me.
Oh, do you want a sob story? Maybe some tragic tale of neglect and abuse?
Her lip curled.
Well, you won't get it. I had a perfectly ordinary middle-class upbringing in middle America with two middle-aged parents who wanted me to be happy in their own middling way. Sent me to college where I graduated in 4 years summa cum laude with degrees in biology and chemistry. I told my parents I wanted to be a doctor, a researcher. Their reply, that's too much for you to take on. Go to nursing school first. She snorted. Would they have said that if I'd been their son?
Doubtful. I agreed. Christy had a couple of decades on me, and breaking out of gendered roles was even harder back then.
You have no idea what it's like not to be taken seriously. To command the most expertise and have your opinions and ideas casually dismissed, only to watch a male coworker put forth the same ideas and be lauded for it. Her hands clenched. To be passed over for advancement and opportunities because you're not friendly enough, or you don't smile enough. To be forced to toady to morons in charge of funding and project approval.
Pure venom filled her eyes when I laughed. Trust me, I said. I know what it's like not to be taken seriously. People assume that because I'm not as educated, I must be stupid. I sneered in derision. You do it to me all the time. Hell, you're the worst. According to you, I'm just a backwater hick who will only get in the way while the smart people worked. My chin went up. I grew up with nothing. And yeah, I dropped out of high school after my abusive mother committed suicide in prison. My God, I'm such a loser, right? At least I'm trying to get educated.
You might have a point, she said grudgingly. Why did that feel like such a damn victory?
Dr. Nikas takes you seriously.
She nodded once. Yes, he does. He's a decent man who's far too hard on himself.
That's something we can agree on, I said, somewhat off balance by our sudden, if tenuous, rapport.
Why didn't you tell him you were going to test possible cures?
She touched her forehead, as if sensing a headache coming on.
It was a last-minute decision. He'd already left for his lab, so exhausted I hated to bother him, especially for what I truly believed would be trivial tests.
I didn't buy into her compassion, even though she came across as sincere. Here's an idea, I said. Bother him about anything and everything. He's super dedicated and would rather hear all the details. Work with him, not at odds with him.
I do enjoy working with him.
Her lips pressed thin.
When it's of my own volition, that is.
She leaned toward me.
You know what's worse than not being taken seriously? Being taken. Forced to work. First for your precious tribe, then for Saberton, after they rescued me from Pietro and took me straight to their Dallas lab, whether I wanted to go or not.
Dr. Nikas hated that you were a prisoner, I said quietly. He threatened to leave the tribe if it ever happened again. No way was I going to tell her about Pierce's proposal to turn her into a zombie. Christy sat back and crossed her legs.
Did he now? He should leave the tribe. He'd be far better off.
She pulled out a legal pad and began perusing notes, signaling an end to the conversation, and leaving me with plenty to mull over for the rest of the return trip to New Quest Corps. Chapter 28. It was twilight when we arrived back at New Quest Corps. Since I was heading to the tribe lab next, Kyle passed me the packet samples for Dr. Nikas, then continued inside with Christy. I spent a good chunk of the drive puzzling over Christy's statement about Dr. Nikas. Why would she think he'd be far better off away from the tribe? She was well aware of his paralyzing fear of crowds. Maybe she wanted him to come work for Saberton, though I couldn't imagine any incentive that would convince Dr. Nikas to defect to the enemy. My worry shifted to how my dad, Jane, Portia, and Bear were handling being thrust into the world of zombies, especially Portia. The others already knew about zombies and had come to terms with the fact that brain-eating monsters walked among them and could actually be pretty nice people. But I'd thrown Portia into the deep end. Not that I regretted my decision. I'd rather have her be freaked out and hating me than see her duct-taped to a cot. Still, once I reached the tribe lab, I tucked the water bottles from the bowling alley into my backpack, then practically ran inside. After I turned the protein packet samples over to Reg, I found Bear sitting in the central rotunda, face puckered in worry.
Angel.
He lunged up from the chair.
Any news?
I checked on your people about an hour ago. They're stable. A safe answer. Better than telling him that some of his people were restrained in the high school gym, and one of them had gone berserk.
Yeah? Okay. That's good, I guess.
He started a nervous pacing.
I told the rest of my group to get into their bunkers and keep in touch with each other and give health updates.
That sounds pretty solid. I paused. Why didn't Nick just have you get in your own bunker? I assume you have one.
Oh, I definitely have one. But Nick probably knew I wouldn't stay in it and would instead be checking on the others.
I smiled. Was he right?
100%. But now he's still out there with all that shit going on.
Nick knows all of the safety protocols, I reassured him. Bear scowled.
Everyone in my survivalist group knew them too. Didn't help my people at the bowling alley. I fucking worry about him.
So why are you telling me you're worried? Bear stopped pacing.
You're right. You're fucking right.
Of course I am. Go call him right now. But first, where are the others?
The congresswoman is in the conference room making a zillion phone calls, pulling strings to get more medical staff and supplies down here. Your dad is in the media room, and Miss Portia went off with that tall doctor guy.
She did? My pulse quickened. Why, was she hurt? Or was she really freaked out about the zombie stuff? Or doesn't she know yet? Is she...
Vera held up his hands. Angel, stop. She's fine. We broke the news to her on the way here. Figured it was better for her to find out from us before she was in the thick of things.
How did she take it?
Utterly disbelieving at first, as expected. Then Kang... Well, let's just say he convinced her zombies were real.
Nuh-uh. No, let's just say, what did Kang do?
Weirdest thing I've ever seen.
Bear whistled low.
First, he got old, like he was in his 80s. Then a knife slash kind of wound opened up on his arm and closed right back up. And then he went back to looking normal 40-something. I could tell she was a believer when she started asking him questions, really technical stuff on how it worked. Kang finally told her she should talk to Dr. Nikus.
I relaxed. She's in good hands then.
Sure seemed that way to me.
He stepped away to call Nick. I made my way to the media room, where I found my dad playing Swords and Swagger on the big screen TV. I gaped. You brought the play box here? He startled, then faced me with a mulish expression. Well, you gave me a half hour's notice, and I remembered that this place ain't exactly a funhouse.
Okay.
Wow. But I had to admit he had a point. Well, you know how I said it might have been from someone with the tribe? It turns out it was from Andrew Saber, the guy I turned into a zombie when I was in New York.
What, like a weird-ass Mother's Day gift?
I snickered. Not quite. He had to go into hiding because there was a chance his mother, Nicole Saber of Saberton Corporation, had found out he was a zombie, and he's using the game as a way to communicate with me.
So I guess I should have left it at the house. He grimaced. Sorry, baby. I'll get it all unplugged so you can take it back.
Nah, keep it. I'd never get it set up right in a million years. But if I'm not here and need to get a message to Andrew or talk to him, you have to do it for me. He groaned.
Guess it serves me right for bringing it along.
Sure does. I grinned and kissed the top of his head, then went to the research wing. I found Dr. Nikus in the computer room seated beside Portia. Before them, amorphous blobs flowed across the monitor screen. Portia said something that made Dr. Nikus laugh, a warm sound that sent a wave of delight through me. I couldn't remember the last time I'd heard him really laugh. Nearby, Marla lay flopped on the floor, with Portia's big dog Moose beside her. Dr. Nikus looked up as I entered.
Angel, I was just showing Dr. Antilli some of our research.
She smiled and put a hand on his arm.
Please, call me Portia.
His own smile turned radiant.
And you must call me Ari.
I bit my lip. Portia, you're not freaked out?
I admit I had a few qualms, but Ari has been showing me how the organism utilizes prions. It's quite fascinating.
She stood, probably sensing that I needed to talk privately with Dr. Nikus.
But I'd best go see if Jane needs anything.
She politely excused herself and left, with Moose padding behind her. He watched her go, smile fading. She's really nice, isn't she? I said.
Indeed, she is. A remarkable woman.
You don't look very happy about it. He looked away.
She is also a very sick woman.
I sank onto a stool. Please tell me you mean sick like, whoa, dude, that kickflip was sick.
Alas, no. Unless I'm mistaken, she has advanced pancreatic cancer.
Tears stung my eyes.
Well, that sucks.
Understatement of the century.
Dr. Nikas could smell sickness, so I had no reason to doubt him. Damn it. I should have fucking hugged her at the coffee shop. Maybe she'd be willing to be turned. The lines in his face deepened.
It's much harder to turn someone successfully when they have late-stage cancer.
I frowned. But Kyle had advanced lymphoma when Brian turned him.
Kyle beat enormous odds. I don't have enough data to make a definitive statement, but I would estimate less than a 15% chance of success with metastasized cancer. And if the turning fails, death is immediate.
I silently railed at the unfairness of it all. I had a feeling Dr. Nikas was doing the same. How much time does she have? I asked, pleased my voice only wobbled a little.
Perhaps 6 months. Without reviewing her test results or, tasting her, I cannot be certain.
I squared my shoulders. Okay, we'll deal with that once the current crisis is over. I refused to let myself believe the current crisis might last much longer. I couldn't get the bowling alley carpet, but I got some blood on a bar rag and gave it to Christy. Since you weren't there, I saved the bag so you would have some to work with. I handed over the bag and the two bottles. This is what Bear's people at the bowling alley were drinking. Nice springs. Maybe the Shambler disease was spread through the water? I know it's a long shot.
It is a long shot, but it wouldn't be a shot at all if you hadn't had the presence of mind to collect the bottles.
He gave me a proud smile that lifted my spirits.
Now, why don't you tell me everything that happened?
With supreme effort, I managed to keep it all from tumbling out in a torrent, and instead carefully thought through each event to include any details that might be important.